Money FM 89.3, best of the evening runway. The Washington Report.
Money FM 89.3, it is the evening runway. I'm Elliot Danker. Let's take a look at some headlines out of the United States, starting off with U.S. President Joe Biden set to host Japanese Prime Minister Fumio Kishida, as well as Philippines President Ferdinand Marcos Jr. at the White House summit later this week. First of its kind, sort of trilateral summit. And one of the things they'll talk about is the U.S. influence in Asia, as well as the South China Sea. How is the U.S. looking to upgrade its operations in East Asia as well? One of the things that we will discuss. My guest this afternoon is Tricia Craig, Vice President Engagement and Senior Lecturer of Social Sciences, Sociology and Political Science at Yale NUS College. Tricia, good afternoon.
Hi, Elliot. Great to be here.
And happy birthday to you, young lady.
Thank you.
Stay forever 21, yeah? Once you reach a certain age, it's all the same. Okay, Tricia, let's talk about President Biden meeting the Japanese Prime Minister and the Philippines Prime Minister. It's happening on the 11th of April. This is the first of its kind U.S.-Japan-Philippines trilateral summit. Now, what are some of the major items on the agenda? In the news a little bit earlier on, I talked about the Philippines President Ferdinand Marcos Jr. saying that the Philippines wants to continue dialogue with China over South China Sea. So how big an issue is this going to be at the summit?
The South China Sea is going to be huge. So I also want to say this is the first of its kind for these three countries, but it follows on last year's summit that the U.S. did with Japan and South Korea. So it's kind of part of this pattern. I think the current one is going to be focused on freedom of navigation in the South China Sea. One of the things the Philippine ambassador suggested is that joint naval patrols are on the agenda. So although they are, you know, continuing to dialogue with China, they're clearly opening to other allies in the region.
How do you view all of this? I mean, South China Sea aside, how do you view all the other potential issues as part of this, if you don't mind me calling, so-called alliance priorities in this part of the world?
Well, I think one of the things that this summit is doing is that it highlights the South China Sea. I think sometimes we forget when we focus on Taiwan that there are other priorities, and one of them is regional security. And for Japan, the South China Sea is incredibly important to its supply chain. So it's really beefing up its military role and becoming a leader in the region. And it makes sense for Japan to do that.
Okay. U.S. operations in East Asia, then, obviously, this, I feel that we will be also looking out for China's response to all of this as well.
Well, China has already said that, you know, they see some of this as a provocation. But I think we are going to see more sort of military integration. The U.S. and Japan were expecting a new framework for things like co-development of weapons, allowing U.S. to repair its warships in Japan to support activities in the Western Pacific. And it looks like there will be a dialogue starting about unifying the command functions, Japan's self-defense forces in the U.S. military to make them more integrated. So, I mean, we are really seeing, you know, and on the heels of the South Korea and Japan discussions about the challenges from North Korea, I think we are seeing more U.S. involvement in the region.
Tricia, you know, geopolitics is something that I really take a lot of interest to in my line of work. And I wonder, with regard to these huge dialogues, right, in view of the fact that the U.S. and Japan could have new leaders come next year, how do these things usually get handled? You know, thinking down the line, a new leader might want to change an approach. What do you know about this?
So, look, I mean, I think nothing can, you know, sort of ironclad guarantee the outcomes of this. Okay. But I think one of the things that we're seeing with Japan's sort of increased military spending, in a way, look, they know that a Trump presidency is a possibility. So in a way, this is a message from Tokyo to a potential Trump administration saying, we know the criticisms that we haven't stepped up enough. Hey, look, we're stepping up.
Okay, fair enough. Let's talk about something else then. There's another meeting, Janet Yellen kicking off her second visit to China as the U.S. Treasury Secretary over the weekend. Land talks marks the latest step forward in joint efforts to stabilize rocky ties between both countries. And, you know, if we do have another Trump administration, remember trade war from 2016.
That's right.
Your thoughts on, you know, how this is going and Janet Yellen's sort of action to go to China and have these dialogues. What does the playing field look like for her?
So everybody is worried about overcapacity in China. I mean, China is producing too much stuff in the sense that they're trying to export their way out of a domestic glut. They're trying to export their way to prosperity. And it's it's bad for not just the U.S., but countries like Mexico and some countries in Europe who are also producing, and especially things in the clean energy sector. And countries are trying to get their industries in those areas off the ground, and they can't because the stuff from China is just so cheap. They can't compete. So I think Janet Yellen is there. You know, you mentioned the Trump tariffs. She did not bring up tariffs. Yep. People wondered about that. But of course, they are in the back of everybody's mind. And it's clear to everyone they're not off the table. But I think she preferred to lead not with a threat, but to try to convince them more by diplomacy to sort of reorient production.
Okay. And talking about tariffs and the fact that I think a couple of weeks ago, 1 or 2 weeks ago, we had Xiaomi release their new EV. It looks quite nice, like a half Porsche, half Tesla kind of thing. EU was reacting to that because they produce quite a bit of EVs. The odds that eventually the US is going to make noise about this particular matter. What are your thoughts on this?
I think particularly in the EV sector where China is producing something like 5 to 10 million extra excess cars a year, given that. I mean, the Europeans are really losing out in this space. The Chinese are going, you know, full speed ahead on EVs. They are producing very good vehicles. Right now, it's difficult to get them into the U.S. because of, you know, tariffs and things like that. But I think this will come back to be a political issue in the United States. You know, the so-called China shock where... So I think this is something that is very much on Yellen's mind, and it's very much on U.S. political leaders' minds.
So in light of what you just talked about, that China shock, right, the how China is trying to give its economy, that sluggish economy, a bit of a boost, and the fact that Janet Yellen visits China, what, for 6 days or something like that, a sign that they're a little bit worried? They're really worried about this?
I think the U.S. is worried about it, but I also think the Chinese is worried about it, right? Because they are worried about tariffs coming in. So I think, look, she is somebody that the Chinese have signaled they like dealing with her. So I think she is sort of barnstorming, trying to get them to listen. And the fact that they're willing to host her for 6 days means that maybe they are willing to listen. Yeah. But I do think that, you know, it's not just in the EV space, but other things where the Chinese are really ramping up things like commercial space exploration, life sciences. Those are areas where the U.S. currently has a lot of advantage. So this is the sort of, I think, coming battleground between the U.S. and China.
Excited about this next issue. Would you take a plane from Donald Trump International Airport? You knew this was coming. My gosh, so House lawmakers have introduced legislation to rename the largest airport in the DMV area after former President Donald Trump. Mocking this, House Democrats proposed naming a prison in Miami after Trump, who faces up to 4 criminal trials, I might add. I mean, it feels like this is just going to give more coverage to Trump.
Yeah, I mean, look, this is a bit of a political stunt. It kind of came out of left field. It's mostly people from, mostly Republican congressmen from all around the country, not necessarily in Virginia or Dulles, which they would name it after, which they would rename. It was quickly, you know, sort of just completely made fun of by Democrats and late night chat show hosts.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I don't know. I can see the Trump prison thing. I mean, after all, you'd be wearing orange. But the airport thing, on a serious note, I mean, you're looking at, what, 25 million travelers pouring through their airport for 2023. I mean, would this potentially go ahead? Would we really see a Trump International Airport?
Well, look, obviously there would be a lot of outrage. I mean, people are already pointing out that, you know, one of his first moves in office was to try to institute a Muslim ban, right?
Yeah.
But I also think that people get used to first of all, full stop, it's not going to happen. But people get used to these things. Reagan National was named after President Reagan, who, you know, was the president who fired the air traffic controllers during a strike. There was a lot of outrage at the time, but, you know, we all got used to it.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, if you really want to get a sense of what people think of Trump, go to New York City, stand outside Trump Tower, and observe Americans. Okay, finally, President Biden has vowed to fund the rebuilding of the Francis Scott Key Bridge during his visit to Baltimore last Friday, I believe. Of course, he was there to take a look at the damage from the collapse of the bridge. Very unfortunate incident, but pressure is mounting to reopen the port. Federal officials reportedly have estimated that it could cost more than $2 billion. So the administration is seeking Congress to allow the federal government to pay 100% of the reconstruction costs. Can this go through? Would Republicans stand in the way?
No, the Republicans already started screaming about that. I mean, presumably Biden wants to have the federal government pay for it because it needs to get repaired as quickly as possible. Baltimore is only the 17th largest port in the U.S., but it is first for cars and light trucks, and that is disrupting global supply chains, which are, you know, still haven't totally recovered from COVID, but also with the problems in the Red Sea, things are a mess. And so it's going to start really sort of having a domino effect up and down the East Coast. So what Republicans want is they want to see the shipping companies who are involved pay up. Some have even called on Singapore to pay because the ship was registered here. But of course, we know that ships get registered all kinds of places. So there definitely will be a fight about this.
Tricia, is it me or has President Biden's presidency for the past 4 years been heavily on infrastructure improvements?
You know, it has. I mean, along with healthcare and the economy, this is the huge part of his message. There are hundreds of projects all over the country, rural areas, you know, and roads, bridges, high-speed infrastructure, tens of billions of dollars, hundreds of projects. But, you know, it's not a message that seems to have gotten traction with a lot of voters. So he is pushing it and has done a lot, but people aren't really recognizing it.
Yeah, I've noticed that too. All right, I've been speaking with Tricia Craig, Vice President, Engagement and Senior Lecturer of Social Sciences, Sociology and Political Science, Yale and U.S. College. Tricia, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at audio.sg or download the audio app. That's AWEDIO, audio at the App Store and Google Play.